Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together, whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.
Hello and welcome to another episode of My Property World. I'm delighted to be joined by Hugo Mayhew. Great to have you on, Hugo.
Thanks, Will. Appreciate it.
So Hugo is a really interesting young entrepreneur, London-based. He's been around the world and back, and he's got a fantastic concept within property regarding co-working. Do you want to briefly tell us about that, and then we'll get into your own fascinating backstory?
Yeah, so I mean, we're now the 2023, so we're looking to sort of really push on our main function for Nitox, which is essentially to unlock the city to young professionals. So we've been
in last and Nitox is in the knight in shining armor with a K, Ox.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's .com, is that correct?
Nitox.com, yeah. Yeah. So,
okay, so Nitox.com, yes.
Yeah, perfect. So last few years, we've been mainly focused around events and offers around the city and abroad and partner trips away. So whether that's skiing in the French Alps or being a yacht in the Mediterranean, and doing like inter-era events in London. So like, imagine your Great Gatsby summer parties, your Casino Royale events. We're looking to do like Venetian masquerades with the actual Prince of Venice who runs the carnival. So we create kind of memorable moments for young professionals to connect and meet in a physical space. But we've now reached the point of where we want to be, and it's taken a few years longer because of COVID. But we're now at a position where we've got a network, we've got the brand equity that we need, and the right sort of relations to be going after co-working companies and private members clubs. So we're creating what essentially is going to be our tier two Nitox membership, which wouldn't just be for Nitox. We're opening this platform to other member clubs as well that are virtual, that are looking for the opportunity to give their members access to the whole city. One of the things that you'd find in London is that if you've got meetings across, you know, you've got to get from, I don't know, the West End all the way to the city, or, you know, to Canary Wharf, or all the way the other way to, I don't know, White City Way. It's very hard to find the locations that you need to be in to take a proper business meeting. Or likewise, you know, if you want to go for the right drinks in private areas, we want to basically unlock this all to the working professional. So we're looking to work with the co-working firms and the private members clubs to give them access to our generation of millennials, Gen Z. And in return, we'll also be spotlighting their venues with our members that are on the tier two, and also those that aren't. So we'll bring subsets from those that aren't to get a feel for what it's like to be in these co-working spaces and these private members clubs as well. And of course, there'll be a monetary gain for the co-working spaces on top of that as well. But we're excited. Like, this is a big year for us. There's a lot to get on, and we'll be back with our interior events, doing a Great Gatsby summer party, hopefully in June time, and another Casino Royale. And we've got our first Nitox Escape, which is a trip around the pyramids in Cairo, dinner on the Nile, and then a whole days in Sharm, where we've got full reign of this five-star ultra all-inclusive resort. So We're super excited, and we can't wait to get more and more Young of London connecting and across different.
And the original concept, we're going to get to how you came up with it, but you might want to just fill us in a little bit on your early years and heading off overseas.
Yeah, so. It's been an interesting life so far. I'm now 30, but if you take me back to when I was at university, I was at Manchester University. I was studying international management, focusing primarily on finance and marketing, and I was kind of driven to be in that industry. I'm really always have been fascinated in finance, so it's something that I was always pursuing with work experience and internships. I was in that odd year where either you could go straight to university from school and stay on the £3,000, which thank God we were able to do that back then, or take a gap year and then go in at £9,000 a year. So it made complete sense just to be like, okay, you know what, we'll put off the gap year. And maybe try and include it with a sandwich degree so I can do a year abroad somewhere, which luckily is exactly what I did. So at Manchester University, you can do international management, which is a fantastic course. And you're able to either go to America and choose a university for your third year, or you can go to the rest of the world. So access across most of Europe, most of Asia, and other areas as well, Australasia. It was fantastic, and I got the opportunity to go to Singapore, which was one of my top choices.
And just briefly describe what Singapore is like for people who haven't been.
Singapore is an amazing city. I absolutely love it. It's a really efficient system. It's the only way I can really put it down to detail. Like, everything is immaculate. Everything is professionally run. You are in the heart of Asia. You're two hours away from, you know, pretty much everywhere you want to go to, whether it's Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand, Cambodia, anywhere around there. You've got fantastic opportunity to have a gateway into the rest of Asia. But also as an expat, it's quite a strong community there. It's lovely. And again, you're 1 degree north of the equator, so your hours don't really shift very much. So you kind of get into a nice routine, you know, waking. The sun rises at like 10 to 7 a.m. and mm-hmm. then sets at the same time as well, 10 to 7 p.m. So you can find yourself into a nice routine. You do start missing seasons. You start missing things, especially if you've lived in Europe your whole life. You start missing like cobble streets and the history side of things, and you'd be surprised, especially being from the UK, but you start missing things like rain. So cold rain, not tropical rain, because they do have a lot of that, but it's a beautiful place, and I definitely recommend it to visit.
And as a relatively young man, you were a long way from home.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I was excited about it. Like, I love, at my heart, I'm definitely an adventurer. So I love, like, you know, making the most of the experiences of traveling and everything. And I've been fortunate enough to have that within our family. So my dad, I'm part of his second marriage. So we've had definitely a lot more time with him, which we're very thankful for. And we've been able to travel a lot for that. So it's been amazing. And I've loved taking any opportunity I could. And being across in Singapore, I try and squeeze all of my seminars and meetings into 3 days. So whether that's from like 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., I try and get through everything so that I could then go away with, you know, a few of my German friends or others that I've made out there, and make the most of traveling and getting to know the rest of Asia.
Brilliant. And what were you doing outside the study?
I basically had been doing quite a bit of work with Abercrombie & Fitch and Hollister back in Manchester. Just a retail job to earn some money on the side. my girlfriend of the time, she was going to be coming out for the next 6 months. So I wanted to make sure I could take her away for, you know, Valentine's Day, her birthday, and a few extra trips. So I started working for Abercrombie & Fitch out in Singapore, but the pay was pretty horrendous. I mean, it effectively was around £3.80 an hour in what is one of the most, if not the most expensive cities to live in. So, I mean, it was basically paying for my fees.
So what would a cup of coffee cost in Singapore typically?
It can be like six Singapore dollars 70 for, let's say, like a grande cappuccino, which, you know, it's probably on par now. It's probably, well, I don't know, like £4.70 somewhere around there as well. But yeah, I mean, just living there, you'll find it does get very expensive for sure. But I mean, we're living through a crisis here at the moment, so it's expensive here too. But yes, I was doing that, and then on one of my trips away, that I went to Bangkok, and I basically took a photo up on the sky bar there, and this guy messaged me on Instagram and said that you have been interested in fashion modeling. And I definitely had no interest prior to that. But for that year, all I had to do was pass in Singapore. So as long as I kept up with everyone else, I would pass, and then I'd go back to Manchester and have my final fourth year, which was 75% of the degree. So it was a big, hefty chunk. But whilst I was in Singapore, I was like, well, you know, if it's efficient for me to take a weekend in, I don't know, Malaysia and do a campaign, and it pays for the equivalent of 2 months of working at Abercrombie & Fitch and the amount of hours I'd have to spend for doing that, I was like, well, let's go give it a go and see. So the guy from New York, who became my mother agent, he set me up with an agency in Singapore called Avenue. And from there, thankfully, they liked me. So I managed to do a few campaigns over there, and somehow stumbled into the fashion industry. So yeah, that was a big turn.
And I'm presuming it was over $375 per hour.
yeah, it was a lot more handsome pay than that for sure. So no, it was really interesting. I'd never even considered, obviously, that industry. And you know, it paid for all our trips for the next year. So this is moving from 2013 to 2014. It was becoming really lucrative. And then my mother agent from New York set me up with meetings in London when I came back over Christmas in 2013. And then I had another agency called Premier in London, started doing work with them. And then in the summer of 2014, I went out to New York, got an agency over there, and then started doing campaign stuff for like American Eagle, work with Macy's, Calvin Klein, Nordstrom, a whole load of other brands. So it was kind of a bit of a whirlwind experience, especially for someone who never expected to rock up into that world. And at the same time, I knew I had a degree to get back to, which wasn't a small amount. It was 75% of my degree that fourth year. So I had to put things on hold and head back to the UK to finish off my degree, which, yeah, I mean, it was upsetting seeing jobs for like $20,000 that I had to turn down, which was a bit of a nightmare when you think about it. But at the same time, you know, I'd already spent 3 years of my degree. I needed to finish it. But yeah, so it brought me into a world that I never expected to go into. Fashion industry is a very interesting one. It's very different to your finance industry or anything similar to that. It can be quite fickle. It's a lot about who you know and how you connect with people. There's a lot of good looking guys and girls in the industry. So it's a lot more about that personal relationship, those soft touches and how you can connect with the right photographers, casting directors, like the brands themselves, and also be able to portray those characteristics that those brands want to be seen. So yeah, it was a big learning curve, but there are skills in that I've learned and I've definitely taken through to my career now. But yeah, it was a journey going into that for sure.
And there was a period of loneliness, for want of a better term. Are you comfortable talking through that on air?
Yeah, no, sure. I finished my degree in 2015. I was doing, by this time, you know, I'd had like a year and a half in the fashion industry, spent a lot of time mainly in New York, which is where I was getting most of my work. And I was also doing some health coaching certificates with Precision Nutrition, which is an amazing company. They focus around habits-based approach to health, so getting you practically changing different aspects of your health, whether that's, you know, your movement, your sleep, your nutrition, or your stress. Like, we pick one of those aspects, and then for 2 weeks, we find a practice that suits you and your lifestyle, and then just work on that one until it becomes a subconscious habit. So they're an amazing company, and it's definitely some of the best learnings that I've had. The second year of the certification is all on human psychology, which is incredible, because, you know, at the end of the day, if you don't understand someone's human psychology, you're not going to be able to meet them where they need to be met to make those changes impactful. So it was, again, like a super amazing learning experience for me. But by this time, you know, I was in New York a lot of the time, and I always had that to settle back on. And I was also starting to get clients for my health coaching company as well. And then moved forward to 2017, so a couple of years later, I was looking to sort of help younger graduates moving into law firms, consultancy firms, investment banking firms, or on graduate programs, be able to transition from university to the working world, and know that their health doesn't need to be collateral for wealth. And then, in fact, if you're just being slightly more proactive on different aspects of your health at the times that you can maintain a healthier lifestyle, which in the long run, you know, anything done over and over again, compounded, is going to affect you. So most of my clients at the time were mainly I did have a few 20-year-olds, but my price points were quite high. So I was mainly 40 to 60-year-olds. And they were all from those industries that I knew that I could produce something that wouldn't take people away from their desk or the hours that they were working and you know, being there for their company, but at the same time be more proactive on their health, their choices, and the things that they were doing, so that they could be more productive and happier and healthier as a result of it. So I spent 2.5 months when I came back from New York. In London, I was living in a flat by myself at the time, and I would go to meetings in Canary Wharf to try and get something across with HR of these companies, so that we could essentially be like a perk for the graduates, so they could sell the graduates in and say, listen, we're going to also look after your health and in a variety of different aspects for a whole year to help you transition, with a few, you know, different workshops if they wanted to do it. But the main thing is that we were going to be part of their daily routine. But yeah, so I mean, I spent a lot of time focusing on that. I have serious tunnel vision, and I've become a lot more self-aware of it now. But I started blocking off aspects of my life that I didn't think were important to me at the time. Because I was just so focused on getting a contract across the line. So I stopped seeing any of my friends. I'd literally just work from the flat, you know, go to the gym, get some movement in the day. And then, you know, if I had to go to a meeting, I'd go to a meeting, but I'd just come back, stay in the flat, work on the deck, and then occasionally be like, listen, I need to relax. I need to find things to help me relax. You know, I do what most of us would do and turn on the TV and watch a Netflix series or something. And so I started to come into this cycle of the same routine and realized that I was going, you know, a couple of months without seeing any of my friends. And, you know, I still thought I was socially connected. I would see what they were up to on Instagram. I'd reply to stories on there. I would WhatsApp them whenever they reached out to me. And all I do is like, oh yeah, let's do something soon. That's what I would say. But we'd never ever fix a date in the diary. So there would never be, you know, let's do something this Sunday or whatever. It would just be like, let's catch up soon or something along those lines. So without knowing about it, I started to fall into a depression, and it was just a cyclical routine that had made me fall into it, where I just completely isolated myself from everyone, basically. And it was quite something that 3 months before that, I was in New York going to magazine events and other different events where, you know, I have to sell myself as a social person, as someone that can connect with brands, as someone who's confident. And within 2.5 months, I'd completely isolated myself. And a friend of mine had been like, dude, haven't seen you for ages. I live 5 minutes down the road. Let's grab a coffee. I'm going to be at this coffee shop on Saturday morning. Like, come by anytime. Like, I'll be there for a few hours. And I went to go see him, and I had anxiety just rush through my body.
And this is seeing a friend of yours.
Yeah, someone who I'd known for like 8 years. Good, you know, close friend of mine. And it was quite a surreal moment to know that I'd got to that point where I was genuinely 50-50 about seeing just a friend of mine at a coffee shop. And it was just because I had gotten into a routine that, you know, my mind was telling me not to push myself out of it at the time. So I managed to go see him, and I didn't have to tell him what I was going through or anything like that. But just having that social interaction in the physical space with him, it made me realize that my world wasn't, you know, this small, like tiny. It is so much bigger, and there are other people out there with their own problems.
And living in big international cities can be very lonely, even in good times.
Yeah, exactly. And it's almost it's a double-edged sword, right? You're living in a city with hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people within your generation, but the bigger it is, the harder it is almost to connect. You look at universities that are based on campuses, they do a lot more to connect those year groups and to get them to meet up and do things. Whereas when you're at either bigger universities or moving to cities, there's less of that. I don't know really how to describe it, but you have to be very proactive and continually proactive to grow those sort of social connections in larger cities, and especially London, which is a shame because it didn't used to always be like this. Especially, you know, my dad's 86. He used to go to dinner parties every weekday and dress up and to the nines. So it's a very different lifestyle to what we live in today's world, being it's so digitalized. And I guess, you know, that's part of the story to Night Talks, is that we're trying to get people out physically as much as we can, whether it's through the events that we put on, offers that we create to incentivize them to get out to the city, or our trips away, or anything like that we look to do. And eventually the co-working and private members club tier two is to get those large corporates that have, you know, thousands of employees that work 3 days of at least a week from home, either from their bedroom desks or their kitchen worktops. We want to give them access to be able to take a coffee and walk down the street and go to a co-working firm, or go across the city and take a meeting or be with friends from different industries and be able to work from there in a workable space.
And it's really interesting on the property side, like the co-working operations would see you as a marketing partner, a sales channel. How do you view that side of it? What do the economics look like for the property owner?
Yeah, I mean,
Operator, I should say.
Yeah, so co-working companies are in a very sticky situation with obviously like the increased inflation and other things that have brought their baseline cost levels much higher. And of course, you know, with the cost of living crisis, it's very hard to increase those rates to their members at the same time. So with their break-even points, and this is going a bit into a couple businesses that I know of co-working companies, but their break-even points on average are around 80%. So they need an occupancy rate of 80% or more to start making money, which is crazy. It's a hugely risky business, and you know there's 27% of the market is new every year, so it's a revolving door at the moment for a quarter of the business, a quarter of the market. So we're trying to create a bit more of stabilization in this industry, and obviously, you know, that's a monetary gain for co-working companies as well as we grow our membership and our access to other members clubs virtually that want to have access to this, and eventually large corporates. But we need to show proof in the pudding of what we're able to provide before we can go after the large corporates and say, listen, you want to attract the best talent of graduates coming to your firm, give them something like this where, you know, 3 days of the week they don't have to be stuck in their tiny one bed apartments or something where they're working from the bedroom or whatever. They can go into co-working spaces, meet new people, grow their network, and also then on top of that, get access to our events, our offers, our trips abroad, and grow that network and make the most of the city that they now live in. So we're really looking to push that, and that's kind of where we see the city going. And beyond that, this is where, you know, once we've got the right partners with co-working companies and the private members clubs, we can take this internationally to other big cities as well and grow that out there. But For the co-working companies, there is obviously financial gain from what we would be providing every month for our members to gain access to these. And we'd be using a simple NFC technology. So just like how you would tap into a lot of member clubs around London, you'd either use a digital card in your Apple Wallet or you'd use your NFC card and you just tap it against a reader. If it goes green, it means that it's reconciled against the data in the cloud. And the reception area know to grant you access. And we need that also for the private members clubs, because even though there's no monetary gain from them getting access straight away, obviously they're there for the F&B and the other side of the, which takes up 50% of most of these members clubs anyway. So, you know, and then know that they're giving it to a high level clientele, because these people will be paying at least a couple hundred pounds a month anyway for access to this. But it gives them security. They know that it's a secure system that works, that they are a tier two NITOX member, for example. But beyond that, we also put events on. So we'll do, you know, a whiskey tasting event with like a few other brands, or we'll put on talks, or we'll also do stuff for members. So if our members are specialists in different industries, we can put on talks with them. We can put debates nights on, things like that. And we can do our today style events, which are kind of like just having fun, really. So it's kind of like rooftop brunches and stuff like that.
One thing I find really interesting about you, Hugo, is that as a relatively young entrepreneur, you're focused quite heavily early on giving back and I suppose the charitable aspects of contributing to a community. And do you want to just touch on that briefly?
Yeah, so I mean, like I said, so having experienced my own period of falling in depression and having anxiety, I, and for someone that none of my friends would ever have thought so, especially having been in the fashion industry, mental health has always been very close to my heart. And I've always wanted to be able to create something that if we can just help one person break out that cycle and connect and grow, you know, their friendship circles and professional circles as well, we're doing a service, you know. So we We do all our events, especially our Intuit Era events. We look to partner with charities, and we've done quite a lot of work with CALM, which is the Campaign Against Living Miserably, which effectively is a call line for those that need help, that want to speak through, you know, the troubles that they're going through. We've done it with our Gatsby event, where members were able to donate. We've done the Australian Red Cross when there was the fires in Australia. We put on a apres-ski event in London where members were literally able to strap on ski boots and go skiing and have a campfire outside. And we brought in a whole load of different brands. There was also like a free ski week holiday provided by the ski week. And all we asked for members for that was just £10 donation or more. So there was no official ticket price. It was just essentially donate to Australia Red Cross.
Is there any downside to this business? You're giving back charitably. You're creating value on multiple levels, and you're connecting people. What's the bad stuff?
The bad stuff, in what way?
Oh, I think you've answered the question there. So. Well,
yeah, it's I think that the bad thing is just the current culture. Like we are fighting against cultural norms at the moment. It's very, London is surprisingly isolating, you know, especially if you're new to the city, whether you're coming in from across the country to London, or if you're coming from abroad from another country to live and work in London. It's very hard to find that right community, and so we very much focus on the culture of Lighthouse. Like our culture is very open-hearted. It is like a family feel, and that's what we want to create, and that's one thing that we always maintain our top priority. So at all our events, like, you will feel welcomed. Like we try, and especially for our large events, as we are having new members every day, for all of our large events, I always do a small speech just to remind people exactly why we're here today, and to really make the most of it. Like, everyone in this membership is here to be open-hearted and connect with each other and try and change this culture that we currently have in London, which is a bit of a stiff upper lip and not so much into really meeting new people. So there's a lot of small social circles, and we really want to break that and build the bridge between all of these, so that we can actually create a connected city, which is our motto, essentially, to create a connected city.
Well, that's fantastic. So Hugo Mayhew, you can look him up at nightox.com. I'm Will Mallard. This is My Property. Will, thanks, Hugo.
Thanks, Will. Appreciate the time, and I'm sure we'll see each other soon.
Fantastic.
Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together, whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.